If you care about this movie, you're lying. I would say you're lying or your name is Dwayne Johnson, but if you care about this movie, you're lying. Jumanji, The Next Level was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name is Spider Sean. Here's Spider Robin.
Hi. I love how you opened the episode with "Don't listen to this one."
And Spider Camila.
Cheers.
I mean, yes, but I don't know. I feel like we're fun when we're exasperated.
Okay,
I feel
fair
like
enough.
The Nomiacs are aware that there is not a one-to-one correlation between great film and great episode. It can go a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. They enjoy our snark, I believe.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse was last time 83 and two-thirds. That's the lowest of 2026 so far.
Okay.
As we started with the incredible run of A Few Good Men, West Side Story, and Across the Spider-Verse, all in the mid-80s, and
I did
Evil
definitely
dies
think,
tonight.
Like, oh, the streak is over. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really hate that our Black History Month representation was, like, this landed in there for this.
I think, wasn't our last Kevin Hart movie also a Black History Month draw?
I think so. I think, was it Night School?
Yes.
Yeah.
And also The Rock. The Rock is Black.
Yes.
I want to, what I don't want to do is question that. That would be the wrong way of phrasing it. And nor do I want to go straight into ask a Black person. That being said, Camila, do you feel like The Rock, do you embrace The Rock?
I do. Like, I don't mind him. I feel like he's done a lot with very little. And I appreciate him for that. But it's also, I don't feel... Like, it seems like he could take himself seriously. And I think sometimes we all kind of maybe think that he does, but I don't think he does. I don't think he takes himself too seriously. And I think he just, like,
really?
He has fun with a lot of these roles. And I also, I mean, and I follow him on Instagram and I like his little interactions with his daughter. That's like why I started following him, because it's super cute. And, you know, and it's never that over the top performative, like, cuteness too. It's like very relatable. Like, there was one thing that I think what made me hit follow one time was, like, his daughter was on this kick of singing some song and he was, like, in the car with her and she just kept singing it over and over and over again, and watching his reaction to her singing that song over and over again, I felt seen. I was like, yes. Understood, man. I feel ya. So we claim him.
And he claims so then, y'all too. Yeah. So that's relevant, I think.
Yeah, most
so,
important.
The episode is for him. Kevin Hart
and,
is here.
But also Danny Glover. I mean, he's not there
of course.
Much, but it was a nice surprise. I had forgotten that I did not see this movie.
I had forgotten that I had. I definitely saw this at the time. I definitely reviewed it. I read my review. My opinion has not shifted much in the intervening... Somehow this is 6.5 years ago.
Wow.
But yeah, it's I guess I've seen all of the Jumanjis except Zathura. And
except huh?
Zathura? Wait for Faxi.
Okay.
This is definitely the least of them. You know, the original has its... The original is a mess, but it has that 90s charm. Mm-hmm. The first one with this crew... was, you know, kind of punched above its weight and was fun and funny, and this is observably a film.
I mean, I had fun, but to a point.
So did I.
I think it kind of got in the weeds somewhere in the middle, and it was just kind of like, okay, we can go ahead and finish this now. I think it would have worked as like a 45-minute film.
I think you're spot on that it gets messy in the middle. When they are swapping a lot, that is when I'm like, ooh, I don't know if they're good enough actors to manage this.
Yeah. Like, we don't all, we don't need to see everybody doing Fridge.
Right.
Like, what yes. that is. And yeah, and it didn't, and like, cause we got really, we were already playing a dangerous game having Jack Black do that.
Now, I was going to say, round two of Ask a Black Person.
Right, exactly. So we were, so I was watching very closely. I'm like, okay, Jack, hopefully you talk to RDJ about this. And apparently I feel like he did. And, you know, and he did. And I think he pulled it off well. It wasn't, I wasn't offended. He wasn't doing anything over the top. And it was just like, we saw enough of the actor that plays the actual Fridge or the actual actor, whatever. We saw enough of him to know that Jack was being him. And not a quote unquote black guy. But then when old girl starts to do it, I'm glad we didn't stick with it very long because I feel like it could have gotten real hairy.
Yeah.
I was concerned on both viewings. I think ultimately, like, it's more that maybe someone should have stopped that in the script phase. Mm. But when we got there, I was like, I think you're trying, honestly. Mm. I think you are attempting to not fall into the pits that you might fall into. And honestly, the moment that I felt better was when he switched to being
Bethany?
The blonde girl. And I was like, I don't know, this feels more offensive. Like, because this is a broader stereotype, and she doesn't talk like that.
Listen.
Yeah, I guess she didn't.
She does more in the first one of these.
Okay.
He was doing a semi-accurate impression of the character before she goes through her character arc.
Gotcha.
So I would also say, though, like, when I used to teach Improv 101, like, men adopting a ditz voice every time they played a woman became like one of the things that made me grind my teeth to dust.
Right.
So I am always on edge there too. And I agree that when it comes back, it's like, yikes, man, you were doing better as Fridge.
It doesn't really stay too, because like the elevator scene when they're when they're pretending to be the brothers.
Yeah.
Like Jack as Bethany, he plays her in a way that's, you know, it's not ditzy. It's
okay.
Like, so I kind of felt like she was, I think when she first gets back into that body, maybe there was like that initial like, oh my God, yay, I'm so happy. Like, I'm so excited. Like, now I'm back and I can talk and blah, blah, blah. And then like, I think that maybe that was kind of natural, natural behavior for what to be expected. I mean, you know, last time I was sucked into a video game, it's, you know, like, how much reality can we really expect from this? But still, like,
you have 100% convinced me. Well argued. Gavel.
The surprising thing with that for me is just like, this is Jack Black, comedy icon, and for me, like, he's consistently doing okay and is occasionally sort of funny.
Mm.
And then, like, three giant steps above is the humor of The Rock doing Danny DeVito, which is frequently funny.
Mm-hmm.
And a giant step above that is Kevin Hart's Danny Glover,
which is
always funny.
That's what made it for me.
But then the top is
actually Awkwafina's Danny DeVito is so good.
I mean, Awkwafina is Danny DeVito in her heart. So I guess that was less surprising to me. And maybe that's why I thought that Kevin Hart had the best performance.
Right.
Because, you know, in our previous Kevin Hart episodes, we've talked about how he is funny, but limited.
Mm.
And I didn't know he could do this.
Right. It's the subtlety of it, because we're used to Kevin Hart being up. We're used to him being very hyper, very loud, very, very high pitched. And this was a different form of comedy that I've seen from him, and would I prefer much better.
The bit, this is in the writing as much as the performance, the bit where he is such a long-winded speaker never got old for me.
No, me either.
and he committed to it entirely. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the sixth time we get to that, he doesn't go any faster. He's like, this is,
if anything,
got
he's
one
slower.
Speed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whose job is it to try to explain this to the people? Okay. If you missed the next level, or like everyone who saw the next level, you forgot the next level. I like this movie less than the other two. Anyway, here's Camila with a recap of the fourth Jumanji film.
Spencer is feeling the post-high school blues, so he fixes the busted Jumanji console to chase the Bravestone High. He gets sucked back in, but when Martha, Fridge, and Bethany go in to rescue him, the game glitches. Spencer's grandpa... Wait, you know what, guys? I don't have my glasses on, and I need to...
We will give you a take, too.
I do, too.
Do you want me to cut that out of the episode or not?
We do, you know, by age, count as senior podcasters. Right. So
that's totally your call. Fine. Totally your call. I just had to enlarge my text. Okay. Here we go. Spencer is feeling the post-high school blues, so he fixes the busted Jumanji console to chase the Bravestone High. He gets sucked back in, but when Martha, Fridge, and Bethany go in to rescue him, the game glitches. Spencer's grandpa Eddie and his estranged friend Milo accidentally get pulled into the game, too. No one is the same character as last time except for Em, and Bethany gets left out of the game. Now they are in the desert, and they need to steal the Falcon Jewel from the Hound. It's a race against ostriches, mandrills, and angry mobs, all while the grandpas try to figure out how to stop dying every 5 minutes. Milo confesses to Eddie that he is actually dying. On the outside, Bethany finds Colin Hanks to help, and they get back in the game. Now, she's a horse. The kids don't like their new characters. They find magic water that helps them swap back to the characters they wanted originally, but now Milo is the horse. Up, up, down, left, square. They get the jewel, they save the day, and in a real tearjerker moment, Milo decides to stay in the game as the heroic horse to live out his final days.
Great.
I didn't want to get into the woods.
I thought that was genuinely impressive.
Thank you.
That's more than I could have told you.
I mean,
and you cut the fat in the plot. And I'm like, maybe they should have consulted you.
It was a lot of minutia that was in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're here for 2 hours and 4 minutes.
Too much.
Ugh, and it's classic late tens behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a mid movie runner about. The Rock has an NPC ex that Danny DeVito's excited because a woman's kissing him, and you know, like the process of getting Bethany into the game involves like 4 unnecessary scenes.
Yeah,
there's a lot in there that doesn't need to be there.
So I watched the original Jumanji and the beginning of this reboot yesterday, and then watched this morning, and I do think I would have enjoyed it more, and probably did enjoy it more when I saw it the first time, without that contrast. Because I think you summed it up perfectly, Sean. Like, the first one is messy, but charming. Mm-hmm. And then I think the second one's like genuinely a like rock solid comedy.
So wait, okay, I just want to make sure that I'm clear in understanding. When we say the first one, we're talking about Robin Williams.
Correct.
When we say the second one, we're talking about the predecessor to this one that we just watched.
Right.
And
which is the third one? Shall we get into the facts?
Yes, let's get into facts.
And then, so put a pin in the franchise arc, and we'll get back to that. December 13th, 2019, this film was released, the 33rd and penultimate number one movie of 2019. The last one was Rise of Skywalker, won its opening weekend with $59.2 million. It was second the following weekend behind Rise of Skywalker. A Star Wars is almost certainly going to win. 11 weeks in the top 10. It did make $320.3 million. This was still a big hit. It was 10th for 2019. If you're doing your math, though, that run does go all the way until mid-March of 2020, meaning this was one of the movies in theaters when the theaters closed for COVID-19. Jumanji The Next Level was in 12th place that March 13th to 15th weekend when the theaters started closing. And the final weekend where box office grosses were reported, honestly, for much of that year.
I was not expecting this faxy segment to be this triggering. Like, first you mentioned Rise of Skywalker and then the beginning of COVID.
Well, it's very triggering. But I do, when I put all the triggering stuff aside, it's just such a fascinating movie time.
Yeah.
Because movies like this and Rise of Skywalker and Pixar's Onward was out. Bad Boys 4 maybe was
Bad
out.
Boys for Life.
Bad Boys for Life, excuse me. Because of that, those were in theaters for like a year. Like, you know, when I started, when the drive-ins opened and I started going to the drive-ins, like these movies just were there forever. And were like butting up against micro budget indies that were trying to like make $200,000 instead of $50,000 because they had a clear runway. You know, it was a fascinating moment at the theater, despite how depressing and weird it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Next Level was still in, you know, playing kind of in ways that are not reported for most of 2020.
Okay. I know we've talked about this before, but what were all of y'all's last movies before COVID?
That Chucky remake.
Oof.
Yeah. And that was, but that was more like a, that was right around, like Kaj was not a, was barely a year. And so it was just like, I need to get out of the house. And so yeah. I went to see that by myself. So that was the last one.
It was the Sunday. It was Kurosawa's High and Low.
Oh.
So I'm high-roading everyone.
Mine is Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh, okay. You're on a parallel high road.
It's French.
I remember thinking, like, I'm going to go do things in case I can't do them tomorrow. I was at Row House, and my brother was working at Industry Public House in Lawrenceville at the time, and it's like, I'm going to go eat a meal in a bar. And I was right, and that wasn't the last restaurant meal for a while, because, like, you know, there was outdoor dining before too long. But that was the last time I sat in a movie theater and watched a movie for, like, I don't know, it was February or March of the next year. Shiva Baby was the first one back.
My first back was whatever Fast and Furious that was. Nine?
I don't remember what my first one back was.
Anyway, back to the facts.
Let us not get derailed too much in a remember the dark times.
Right?
Remember slightly different dark times.
I was just going to say, I'm not sure we're quite out of the dark times. Remember those dark times.
Yeah.
Right. This is all based, the whole franchise is based on a 1981 children's book called Jumanji that was adapted in 1995 into the Robin Williams film, which made about $100 million. The author of the children's book, did I write down his name? No, sorry. wrote a sequel book called Zathura, Zathura. The book came out in 2002. An adaptation, Zathura, A Space Adventure, came out in 2005 and does not share characters, but is a canonical spin-off and the second in the series.
Is it also about going into a game?
Yes, but it's going into a space game instead of a jungle
right.
game.
A board game, though?
An old science fiction-themed board game called Zathura in the basement.
I was hoping it'd be like a pinball machine.
Oh.
Dax Shepard, Kristen Stewart, and Tim Robbins are among the cast.
Is that where they met? No,
not
I was
Kristen
hearing that
Bell,
as Kristen Bell.
Kristen
sorry.
Stewart.
Oh, yeah. I swear
listen, I am on a lot of cold medicine right now.
No, I immediately thought of her, too.
That was a big flop. That made $29.2 million in 2005, when literally any old shit made $60 million. So
right.
that killed the franchise for a while. But it is, before The Next Level had a title, Jack Black in an interview would say, we're doing Jumanji 4, because it was firmly established that Zathura is Jumanji 2.
All right.
Revived in 2017 with Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle. That was an even bigger hit than this one, $404 million. It's in fourth place for 2017. Jumanji The Next Level is the fourth film, and the purported final chapter in the franchise is due out this December, December 11th of this year.
Thanks, Tony.
Jumanji 5. Thanks, Tony. It does not yet have a title. Filming is nearly complete. Like, the last update was Danny DeVito has finished his scenes.
The other thing I was going to say in favor of this movie is I genuinely got hyped for the sequel in that final scene.
What, where the ostriches are in the real
yes,
world?
Yes, because I had just watched the totally original. The original is about the game coming out into the real world, right? And then the reboot is about going into the game.
That's true.
So having it go back to the game is coming out into the real world, I'm like, yes.
So does that mean we're going to meet the real Bravestone the rest of them?
I bet.
Interesting.
But isn't half of the appeal seeing those characters do different characters?
Oh, I'm sure they'll find a way.
Yeah. By the way, this film, could you tell? Incredibly quick turnaround to make Jumanji the next level. Filming began in February 2019, wrapped in May. It was out in December.
Well, thank God, or it would have never existed.
Yeah. For a movie this effects heavy, and that's less than 2 years after the previous movie. So I think the previous movie hit, and The Rock said, go, please, more money, please.
But also, with this cast, finding them all available at the same time, that's something you got to jump on.
Apparently, that's why the film that'll come out this year took so long, is that The Rock was tied up with Red One for quite some time.
Oh, boy. And, like, The Rock and Kevin Hart, they're both in my, like, top five. Likes to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially together.
Just two more things. I want to confess that I am low effort on this episode. I probably watched this movie less than anything we've ever watched, except maybe one of the two Transformers. I watched like the first 40, 45 minutes at the gym, like it was sitting on the bike, and then I just let it keep playing as I was driving home from the gym, and
I was doing my
McDonald's
makeup
drive-thru. Yeah. Which is more than enough. You're going to get what you need. And then I was rushing to get the notes done, and I hit a point where I was like, there's no more facts. No one has anything to, like, did you know about Jumanji the next? That doesn't exist, so I don't have a whole lot. But apparently B.B. Newworth is returning from the first film?
Yes.
Robin?
Okay.
Please explain.
Oh, yeah,
I only know
right.
this because I watched it yesterday. Yeah, she, Kirsten Dunst, and the kid are orphans.
They're her aunt.
Because
she's their aunt. Right?
They're always orphans. Right, yes. Yeah. And she is there, overwhelmed. I guess I have kids now. Aunt.
And at some point in the intervening years, she bought Danny DeVito and Danny Glover's restaurant.
Correct.
And here we are.
Yeah. Yes.
Hey.
There it is.
Find a connection.
I wonder if Kristen Dunst going to come back.
I would love that.
I would too. I've grown to like her.
I've always loved her.
There was a moment where there was like a time period where I was just like, ugh, dead eyes.
Melancholia.
Yeah.
Dead Eyes the movie.
I often think, no, she was good in Melancholia, and then you know, the true part of my brain goes, she was just naked a lot in Melancholia. That's
I thought she was phenomenal
that.
In Melancholia. That is also it's in my top 20 movies of all time. I fucking love that movie.
It's so really good. Finally, I felt like, man, The Rock and Kevin Hart are besties. How much? This is the fourth film with both of them after Central Intelligence, Fast and Furious, Hobbs and Shaw, and the previous Jumanji. Have they done one since?
I bet $5. Yes.
Probably.
Yeah. I can't name it right now, but it seems inevitable. But that's not the big collaboration record here. This is the fifth film to feature both Colin Hanks and Jack Black.
Really?
Who
wow.
were both in Orange County.
Of course.
Peter Jackson's King Kong, Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny, and the two Jumanji films. Despite not crossing paths in the Jumanji films, nevertheless.
That is awesome.
Huh.
So they probably get along.
They're dorbs.
Also, Orange County, good movie.
I haven't seen it since, you know, it came out, but
I'll take your word for it.
Peanuts joining us. You be quiet, young man.
Okay, so
it's podcasting time.
Is there any reason why they don't ever actually use any weapons? What is
there was a scene where a bunch of weapons fell out of his bag.
Right.
Like, and I remember there was a toaster in there.
Right.
So I think that might be why.
And then they just kind of, I mean, but there's never been mentioned. Okay, and then I guess it gets addressed later because, like, halfway through, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's been carrying around this backpack and never once has anybody reached inside it to see what's in it. And then we get to the point that, you know, I guess he just didn't know how to use his character properly or whatever. And then that's when Fridge pulls out a boombox, I guess.
Yeah. For dance fighting, yes. Which is one of her special skills.
Oh, that's right. Okay. But I think it's cute. I do like them getting sucked back into the game and not being the characters that they were originally. One, it gives our actors something else to do. Two, it's kind of, it's a nice little nod to gamers or kids who, anybody, or not even just gamers in general, and not like the serious ones, but ones like the passive, like me, like, okay, I want to play this game. I'm only really good with this character, but now you picked it, and now I got to fight my way with this one and figure it out. So I thought it was a nice nod to that.
That is such a good interpretation of that. And like, I think that one of my criticisms that I wrote down was that this one felt less like a video game. So
interesting.
Again, you've convinced me. Gavel.
I mean, I get what you're saying, that it felt less like a video game, because I was kind of getting stuck in the whole thing, because we call out the non-player
character.
Yeah, non-player characters. We point that out, but yet things are still happening. Like, there's this, yes, you have Reese, who that's all he can say, but the world is still existing without whether or not these kids are in a section or not. You know, you see what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. Yeah. Like the bad guy, for example.
Yeah.
Like, is he only existing in cutscenes?
Right.
Is that what, that's the difference there?
Yeah.
It's a little convoluted.
Do you want an answer?
Yes.
Sure.
Jack Black has confirmed that we will meet the real world person playing the bad guy from this one.
Oh,
this year's film.
I like it.
Thank you. I did want that answer.
That makes me feel so much better.
Really, it does.
Yes.
Not an NPC. That is a player character.
Okay.
I always worry about people who choose to play as the bad guy.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever come to... I don't think I've ever played that many video games where you can play the bad guy.
I was mostly thinking about Super Smash Brothers.
I don't usually... I mean, I haven't played Smash Brothers in a long time.
Is that a Mario Kart?
No, I pick a little guy in Mario Kart. I pick Toad or Peach.
Yeah.
In a game with realistic characters, this sounds virtue signaling, but it's more horny than virtue signaling. It's if a game has realistic characters, I'm going to be a woman because I would rather stare at a woman for 100 hours of my life. And I don't get why. Like, in the Gamergate days and things, there were all of these guys that, you know, like, hated when they were a female character. And I'm like, protesting too much? Like,
yeah.
You're staring at this character for days of your life. Why do you need a...
That's a good
point. Why do you
need
He-Man?
That's a good point.
What does that say about you?
And I love when Fridge, when he gets into Bethany's body, or not Bethany, the M... or whatever. Ah, this is so confusing in my brain. But anyway, when
the killer of men?
Yeah, when she's like, don't touch my boobs, he's like, literally, first thing I did.
It's, while we're here, as a man born in the 1980s, I love her. And I'm not really a Doctor Who person, but she's funny, and she's gorgeous, and I'm comforted by her on screen. And I think she has range. I think that Nebula is a really well-rounded
100%.
Character.
Absolutely.
That is not doing, like, her natural stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've also liked her in otherwise terrible movies. Like, do you remember that movie with Angela Bassett and Michelle Yeoh that was, like, the most disappointing movie of that year? I want to say it's called... Yeah, Gunpowder Milkshake.
Yeah, it was so bad.
I'll die mad. But she was pretty good at it.
Yeah, she was. But it's like, and then, damn it, you guys had it. It was right there.
The horror movie Oculus. Stand up.
Oh, God.
And then there was that movie Duel. Do you remember that? Where it was like you could like transfer into a clone of you when you were dying.
No.
And then, but she didn't die. And so then they had to duel. I really disliked that movie, but she was really good at it. It's just a theme with her.
Get it? Because it's Duel, but also there's two of them. Hey, like, they're going to fight in the... Anyway.
And can I spoil it? They don't duel.
What false advertising.
Wow. I know.
Mm-hmm. Hey, the trailer for Jumanji The Next Level.
Still talking to your friends.
It's complicated.
Many a tear has to fall.
When we first got together,
but it's all
we were different people.
In the game. All in the wonderful game.
Grandpa Eddie?
Anthony, did you guys see Spencer?
I think he went back in. We gotta go get him.
Are you out of your mind?
What?
Who are you?
Oh, my God.
You're Spencer's grandfather.
Are we in Florida?
And you?
Milo Walker. Did I die and turn into some kind of a small, muscular Boy Scout?
Are we dead?
Bethany?
No! rich?
I'm the old fat dude.
This can't be happening!
Welcome to Jumanji.
All in the wonderful.
This is a whole new thing.
Let me know.
You've got to have eyes in the back of your head.
What in the Sam Hill?
What the hell is this?
It's your strengths and weaknesses.
Smoldering intensity?
It's a stupid face you make.
Huh?
What's going on?
You having a heart attack? Breathe! Breathe! His whole left side is shutting down. Eddie! All in
the one. I don't care about this either. It didn't really sell it.
Yeah, and it wasn't enough to make me want to see it, because apparently like, it just came and went and was right out of my...
Yeah, I just watched it and I have no memory of it. Again, cold medicine, but still.
You're like, why are we here today? How long have we been recording?
And the letterbox list is 2019 films where the plot is set into motion from an obsession with A or The Rock. Uncut Gems, A Rock. Avengers Endgame, A Rock. Jumanji, The Rock. Nice. Fighting with My Family, The Rock. And actually, there was a third category. Rock, Rocket Man, Rock, Motley Crue's The Dirt, Rock. That's a clever list.
It is.
I like that a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did y'all notice that this was our second Columbia Pictures release where people are going into a different universe that's also a sequel in 2 weeks?
Of course not, Robin. Why would I notice that?
What?
Spider-Verse was also from Columbia Pictures and is a sequel about going into a different universe.
I don't want to say that you two have talked me up because I really don't like this movie.
So you don't, you just straight up don't like it. I mean, is it just uninteresting to you?
Yeah, there are things to like about it, but maybe because it was such a quick turnaround with the previous one, maybe because it feels very CGI-y and like obviously what are we doing here, but it felt very, it had that weightlessness, like that sequence with the whatever's attacking them on the bridges,
mandolins, vandals.
Right, I might as
you
well
had it in your summary.
It.
I had to look it up.
mandrakes.
No, that's a plant.
No.
Mandrills. Yeah. Like Barbara Mandrell and the Mandrell sisters.
Three people try to remember words. I feel like the funny bits are funny.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, there is just nothing here. There is nothing to the plot. There is, we bend over backwards to at least get this moment with Awkwafina and a horse. Which kind of only works because it's funny that she's talking to a horse.
How do we feel about the horse or Danny Glover's character choosing to be a horse?
I got some thoughts, and I'm not sure like where I land on it. First of all, let me just put it out there. I do not like Awkwafina. All right, so the horse, Danny Glover being the horse.
Oh, wow, it's two Dannys.
Yeah, just now hit me. I have so many questions. Okay, so will he just live forever? So he's a horse. So there's no way, as long as he doesn't do anything stupid, he's not going to get killed in the game. So he's just there living forever. And two, does he not have any family whatsoever who's going to miss him in the real world and wonder, the fuck, where's grandpa? Or, where's my dad?
He's dying, right?
Yes.
So I guess that's sort of... He's like, they're going to lose me soon anyway.
But soon
is not the same thing. Soon is not the same as now.
Right.
So that is a really good point. Yeah, I don't know. I just felt really weird about it because he's losing the ability to communicate.
Yeah. I was wondering about that too. But then, I spent much more time with that than anything in this fucking movie, which
the metaphysical
really
questions.
Right, yeah. And I'm just like, well, he's came to terms with that he was going to be dying, that he was just going to die, and who knows where that is. And so to him, this is a much better option. And I mean,
I did get a little verklempt.
I did too.
I'm 75 years old and I just learned to fly.
I know!
Like, come on.
Stop it! Stop it! But I think that's just, and I'm just, I thought like, if, okay, if you, if that were me, like, what would I, if, okay, you're
right,
you only have a little time left and now you found a way to live on forever and just, you don't have to do anything. You're living on the land. You don't have to, like, it's just, and he can fly. Not only is he a horse, he's a Pegasus. So I mean, I think he's good. I'm just concerned about whoever, if there's anybody that he left behind in the real world who is going to have so many questions.
That story kind of, it more works at the end than throughout. Like, I'm more kind of annoyed when they're, like, doing their, I'm bitter and I'm trying to atone, but not really saying, like, that feels like more of the time killing to me. Mm. That's the part of the story that kind of works, but the rest of it is like, okay, why does Spencer go back into the game?
Thank you.
Like, I get that
he hears the drum beats, right?
No,
it's
in his head.
It's just him not being happy where he is and not
worrying about his girlfriend.
No, he just wants to be the Rock again. He wants to be Braverman or Braverstone or whatever. He wants to be the Rock again, and he thought that he's out of all of his friends who have gone off to college, they all seem to be having a great time, and he does not feel the same way. And my thing was that he went into this game with this broken aspect and broken thinking, or the sad sack way of how he was living. But did he really learn anything? No. And that's what that's one of my gripes with it, is that he didn't learn anything.
And I know that we have to beat the video game because that's the rules of this universe, and you have to beat the video game and then you can leave Jumanji. Fine. But that's just an exasperating plot line. Like, we gotta go to the next place and survive the thing and do the thing.
It's inherently episodic.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like this was just a flat imitation. I think I looked back at my review from the time. I think it did feel like, wow, this was so fun last time, and this just, most other than the two Dannys stuff, it felt like, let's do that again real quick and hope for the best. And that, you know, that let me down.
Long story short, I don't think we needed this. We could have gone without this next level, the Jumanji next level. But will you see the next one?
1,000%.
I think I will. And I'm showing you're going to more than likely have to.
They've had time this time, right?
Right.
If my theory is they didn't take enough time to think this one out, well, now they've had 6 years, so.
Right.
Sure. I mean, I love little video game jokes, so, you know. That lands me, I came in at a 33. You did talk me up to a 36.
Wow. You ate this movie.
Doesn't like it. Yeah.
Because it gets muddled in the middle and Awkwafina, I'm going to give it a 6.
Do you think Awkwafina coached the other people on their black sense?
You know what?
Disapproving.
I feel like she probably tried to. And I would like to imagine that Jack Black put her in her place real quick. I'm going to go with 68.
Robin?
I'm definitely above water on this, and I have to give it +2 for The Rock punching an ostrich in the face through a car window. So I'm going to go up to 57.
We come to this place with a punching ostrich. It lands right about the middle, 53 2/3. The streak is over, but, you know, we have an entirely above water 2026 thus far.
Sweet.
To the bingo card.
Oh. But my craft project's ready.
Oh, yay!
Okay.
Oh,
hi, everyone. We have for years, literal years, the better part of a decade, argued over who the hell's turn it was on bingo and what happened and who won what. And after struggling through that for lo these many years,
I think
Robin fixed
I have a system. We'll see how well it works. Okay, so here's the board.
Did you draw
I did
them?
Draw them. They're your cute little faces.
Good artist.
It's adorable.
And so if you have a V next to your token, that means you have a veto. If you have an X next to your token, that means you've used it. Okay. If you get your second veto, we go like right here. And then if you get your third veto and you get the right to pick Anomia, you get a little piece of popcorn.
Aww.
And then if you get what Sean has right now, the right to pick a non-Nomia as a little treat, you get a piece of candy.
Aww.
So there's Camila's favorite candy, the pull-apart Twizzler, Sean's favorite, Reese's Pieces, and Colin's favorite, Sour Patch Kids. My favorite is Raisinets, and that would look like a turd.
Right.
So that's the veto board.
Thank you, Robin.
Everyone,
that was amazing.
I had
Thank
a lot of fun
so
making it, too.
Did we leave all the bingo cards there?
No, I have mine.
I can't even find mine.
Is there anything? I don't think there's anything on it.
No, okay. I found mine.
Do you see mine sitting across from you?
No.
It sounds like we're not making much progress on the bingo card today, though.
Animals die.
Oh, sure. Do digital animals count?
Yes.
We're not going to watch a movie in which an actual animal dies.
What kind of snuff are you trying to do?
I mean, I've got a pick later. I could name three off the top of my head.
Did we... Somebody fell into water, yeah?
Yes, I believe the bad guy.
Yeah.
It is set at Christmas time. Did they mention the new year at all?
I don't
think so. Career sacrifice. Danny DeVito retiring when he didn't want to.
No, he was forced.
Okay.
He wasn't really.
That's not a willing sacrifice.
Ooh, good point.
But is Danny Glover saying, I'm out of it? I'm out?
No.
Again, because it's sacrifices when you do something you don't want to do.
Right. All right. I think that's it. Animal dies falling from a great height into the water.
And also in the bingo rules, because I lost track of my card this week. If I got a bingo, it doesn't count.
Yep.
Subsection of the rules. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. And it has not been long since we recorded last, to peel back the curtain a little bit, so this may not be the most robust section. Particularly, I've been watching the Winter Olympics pretty much nonstop. Yeah. I've only cried a couple of times.
Aww.
Let's start with Camila.
I did figure out what my first movie back after COVID was, and it was the Candyman remake.
Oh.
Hmm.
So interesting.
And as you're hearing this, not as we're recording it, thanks to Camila for guest introducing the original Candyman at last night's Steel City Horror
and
Show.
As we're recording this,
and
I'm sorry that I'm not there because I'm sick.
I watched Relationship Goals with Method Man and Kelly Rowland, which is very cute. I could be very biased because I'm very into Method Man.
He's so charming. He needs to act a lot more.
Oh, God. Yeah, he does. And, oh God, I can't... It's like, and I can't even talk about him without, like, salivating. it's really disturbing. So, yeah, I mean, no notes. Just go watch the movie. And speaking of your t-shirt, Keanu Reeves, which is a very cute shirt, I watched Good Fortune.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Which, it only works with Keanu. Like, Seth Rogen and Aziz Ansari, they're fine. But they're those kind of comedians where I can only take them in small doses, and I really wish that we could stop overusing them so much. But they're fine. And Kiki Palmer is cool, but I don't like her there's a 10-year age gap between her and Aziz, and they're like a love interest there. And it's kind of ridiculous for so many reasons. But damn it, Keanu is...
Yeah.
I know, right? Like, come on. But Keanu is so funny as an angel who's just like misplaced on Earth now. And there's a moment where he ends up having to take a job as a dishwasher. And Dan is like, is it... He looks so comfortable in this dishwasher. Get up. We're both like, yeah, like I doubt that he... he was like a movie star pretty young, so I doubt he did that. But it was also like, but you know what?
Maybe volunteer.
Yeah, like also, that's what we were saying. I was like, but you know what? I wouldn't put it past Keanu that he just does that now on the weekends. Whatevs, picks up a shift here and there. So I highly recommend it. It's on Stars right now.
I did a double feature of this week's new releases, which it's mid-February during the Olympics. So not a big impact. Psycho Killer.
How was that?
Is a horror... and they don't play the song because the movie is too bleak.
Wow.
horror movie, first time director, but the writer is the writer of Seven, Andrew Kevin Walker, who is best when he's collaborating with Fincher. Mm-hmm. He wrote Seven. He script doctored Fight Club and The Game. Oh. He wrote The Killer, the Fincher movie from 5 or 6 years ago.
Boo. I never finished it. Maybe it got
either.
Good.
I never finished it.
No, it's very dull. But when he is not with Daddy Fincher, less successful. He wrote Sleepy Hollow. He wrote Event Horizon. You know, the 2010 Wolfman that was really bad. Stir of Echoes. So this just is such a whiff, and it's from the script. It's, you know, there's a madman serial killer type driving across the country, killing people all the way along. And, you know, he kills a traffic cop or a highway cop in the middle of the country somewhere. And that traffic cop's cop widowed wife is tracking him down. And it just becomes kind of like a half-assed police procedural. Malcolm McDowell shows up in the middle as a horny Satanist, and that spices things up a little bit. And the one I'm...
I definitely thought he was dead.
No, fully alive, looks much the same. Like how long ago was Rob Zombie's Halloween, where he's there, he's the Loomis, right?
Oh yeah.
Like that movie's like 15 plus years old. Isn't that from like 2008?
I was going to say 2007.
So he looks exactly the same. I mean, he looks radically different from A Clockwork Orange, but hasn't whatever, you know, 70 to 90 he's on now, no change. The one I'm excited about here is the director, whose name is Gavin Pallone. This is his first movie. And the beginning has this great atmosphere, this like, we're on the road, but like real, where it's bleak and depressing and concrete and sad, you know, but the movie doesn't work. Even the horror fans, you don't need to bother. And then How to Make a Killing, an A24 movie, Glenn Powell, Margaret Qualley, Ed Harris is in it. It has a great cast. It's a black comedy. Glenn Powell's a spurned scion of a rich family, and he's going to kill off all the other heirs so he can get the fortune. It's funny sometimes. It's not funny nearly often enough. There's a lot of charming people in it. They're charming if you just want to watch movie stars. You know, second movie on a flight, last hour at a hotel while you're half asleep. But it's not a great week at the multiplex. But last night, I took special subsection of Little Trip, Littlest Trip, which is where I'm in a different city that day, but I return and still sleep in my own bed. As I texted Robin, I'm looking at two people with two competitive Oscars who are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Where am I? And the answer was a Nine Inch Nails concert. It was really, really great. Like, they, Trent Atticus, and the people that they've hired this time around are just, you know, one of the best bands I've ever seen just at playing their songs.
What is a Nine Inch Nails concert like in 2026?
Like, what's the average age?
What's happening? Like, is this
me exactly? Chairs? No, it was an arena. It was a full arena. I would say I was the average age. This one probably skewed a little younger because we were on the campus of Ohio State University, so there were probably more students there than the average. But you know, it works. It works more like a normal rock concert. You know, like there's not, presentationally, there wasn't a lot of difference between going to see this and going to see Journey. Okay. You know, it's just playing Nine Inch Nails songs, which is kind of weird in that setting, but that just makes it cooler.
Right.
They were very, very good. Shockingly, they did the song from Tron Ares. Even more shockingly, it opened with him alone on piano doing the song from Bones and All and Perfect Drug. So like a little Lynch moment for me. And the rest of the crowd, but mostly me.
So wait, so he wasn't
Robin.
It was Nine Inch Nails. It wasn't just like Trent. It was presented as Nine Inch Nails, not Trent Reznor and Atticus.
Yes, it was presented at Nine Inch Nails, and it was like a five member band. Trent and Atticus were two of them. The other three were, you know, whoever they tour with right now. Right. And there's a DJ named Boys Noise who did the opening set and joined them for a while, because at Coachella this year, that's going to be its own thing. Like Nine Inch Noise, which is Trent Atticus and this guy, are doing like a more techno EDM set of Nine Inch Nails songs.
Interesting. So
that was very good. That was way better than the movies I watched this week. Robin?
So did you not see Crime 101?
No. I was like, I'll do this maybe, but... It was really long, and I was like, I'm not going to bother.
That's what I would have seen if I were not sick.
Mm-hmm.
But I did see, the day before I got sick, I saw, and I wore a mask, so I didn't, good thing, because I was, you know, pre-sick, yeah. Was Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie, which you briefly mentioned last episode, Sean. I liked it a lot more than you. You know, around two-thirds of the way through, I did go, a woman hasn't talked yet. And that is hard for me, but right. It really just is these two guys, and I genuinely loved it. Like, I thought it was so funny and charming, and I think it did just the right amount of spoiler nonsense. Like, I think this is a movie that you should know very little about, except, like, you should know it's not about the band Nirvana. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing to know about this movie. And you should probably have a general sense of Canadian nonsense.
Yeah. Right.
But, like, I don't even want to say what, like, the overarching plot is, because it was so delightful and surprising for me as it happened.
Most people liked it a lot more than me. I'm seeing people who are already being like, this is going to be my number one movie of the year. You know, I watched a digital screener on a laptop in the afternoon, a little sleepy. So, you know, that probably hurt.
Okay. I saw it in a packed Wednesday night theater.
Yeah, it's catching on. It's, you know, there are flavors of weird comedy, and, you know, some of them, if that's the flavor you like, this is really gonna work for you.
You know, we talked a little bit about Gen Z comedy last episode, mm-hmm. right? And this, I think, is sort of threading this needle from Gen X back straight to Gen Z all the way through the lengthy generation of millennials.
But always Canadian. The one thing I did enjoy was how much he said sorry. at one point he says sorry to a raccoon he startled. Anything else? Anything you saw at home in your convalescence?
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the America's Next Top Model docuseries. Whoa. That's on Netflix. Did you watch it?
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Oh my God. Did you watch America's Next Top Model when it was airing?
I watched a couple of cycles, sorry.
Same. Yeah.
Because my roommate in college really liked it. So it was like a show that was on in my presence a lot, if that makes sense. And it is incredibly compelling television, right?
Yeah.
Like, I totally understand why it was such a big hit. But
right.
having this distilled look at how awful it could be, like, genuinely bummed me out.
Well, it's like, I watched a few cycles, like, on purpose, like, I chose to watch it, but even like even watching it live, I knew, I was very much aware, and it could be because I was a little bit older than probably their normal fan base, but it's like, it was very much aware, like, this is bullshit, like, everything that's happening right on camera, on screen right now, this is, why the fuck are your parents allowing this, you know, like, it's just, it's crazy to me that, and it makes me sad to know that there was still, like, there was this generation, and it's still going to happen, however, but maybe not as often, but there are these young women who were duped into believing that Tyra had their back, that there was this other woman that had their backs.
Sure.
And would protect them and help them succeed in a way that she did not. And I don't think that she had any sort of power that she wanted to pretend that she had in any way or shape.
Yeah.
So,
because she talks such a big talk about that, about opening doors.
Yeah.
And, you know, lifting people up, and then does the exact opposite. And, like, she pulls the ladder up behind her.
Right.
And it's rough.
Yeah.
And my biggest criticism of the documentary or the series is they really let the main people from the show, most especially Tyra, get away with it.
Yes.
Like, they keep offering these, like, weak explanation excuses,
mm-hmm.
and like the number of times that people say or allude to, it was such a different time,
right?
It made me crazy.
Yes.
and I really felt like especially Jay Manuel was sort of trying to deflect it all back to Tyra, which I do not think is accurate. He also seemed a little full of shit at times. Like, Absolutely. He was like, they roped me back for one more cycle. And then he did 9 cycles, and they don't ask him to explain that at all. I just felt like the documentarians were truly letting that group of people set the narrative in a way that just makes it feel less like valid reporting.
Yeah. Well, it was clear that they were not American, the filmmakers. Yeah. I don't know where they hail from.
Neither do I. Yeah.
But I think that may have had something to do with it. And also, you know,
like, they were like, I'll take your word for
it. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I love how everybody wants to talk about how much change and how much power they have, Tyra and Jay, until they want to call out and talk about that poor girl who was sexually assaulted.
Right.
On their watch, on camera. And then that was like, whoa, that was production. I wasn't, you know, I didn't do this. Mother, you.
It was someone else's decision.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Like, if it's all there, you saw tapes. If you weren't there in the house, you heard about it. You saw the tapes. You saw what happened. Advocate for somebody other than yourself and help her. Mm-hmm. It should have been pulled plug at that point when it happened. And the whole, we warned them, we told them this is very much a documentary style. We're going to let whatever happens happen. So you mean to tell me if somebody rolled in there and shot up the place, nobody would stop anything? You would just let it play out because it's documentary style? It's bullshit. And they can all go to hell. Quite frankly, like, and you know, you got what you got, and that's it. And I feel sorry for Miss J.
Me too.
What happened to him and them? I don't know what their pronouns are, but
they used he throughout the documentary.
That's right. But yeah, so that the whole thing infuriated me.
Like, yeah, and I do think that I'm not going to say don't watch it if you find this interesting, but I do think that there's an upcoming docuseries that they're not involved in that's going to be on E! I do think that's going to kind of inherently be better.
I saw something else too. It was a couple years ago, and I don't remember where it was, and it had nothing to, like, Tyra wasn't involved, and Jay's or Nigel weren't involved either. I think they talked to a lot more of the winners. That girl, Adrienne, the first winner, she was on there. And I think Eva, they talked to her. So, like, I watched, like, probably 6 or 7 cycles of it.
Anyway, interesting show. I'm glad you watched it so we could talk about it. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about is, remember I said that my most anticipated movie of the year was the companion album, Wuthering Heights. I was right. Yes. Charlie's new album rules.
It's so good. And like, I like Charlie, but I'm not, I like Charlie in kind of a lukewarm way. I'm not all in like Robin is. And this album is amazing. I mean, it's short. It's like 34, 35 minutes long, but every track is fantastic.
Is this a new trend now, which I'm noticing with a lot of newer music, because I'm letting Spotify suggest stuff to me. A lot of new music is like less than 3 minutes, and I'm appreciative of that. And like, albums are shorter. Like, is this a new thing? I'm here for it.
I think it's AirPlay related.
We're still doing this? What's AirPlay? Are you talking about the radio?
Like, if a shorter song gets played on the radio more.
Well, yes, but I'm saying, like, this is still a thing? Like, we still give a shit about what plays on the radio?
I see. Oh, that's a good point. I don't know, Sean, you're the person who does our... for our listening audience, he just did a shrug.
There are still ways in which songs become number one, and they're not immune to that. Like, yes, a radio DJ can play a song more often if it's short, but also, like, it's gonna come up more on your Spotify playlists if it's short. And it's, you know, I mean, I think having a short song is still beneficial to the success of a single, but I don't really know. I mean, I'm just glad we're out of the late 90s where every hip-hop song had 2 extra minutes of the beat at the end of it for no reason.
Or like, or like 5-6 different remixes. Part 12! Yeah. Like, no.
Hey, hi everybody. Ooh. I'm picking the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And my only limitation is it can't be a number one movie in America.
Oh.
I had picked something, and then I forgot what I picked. And then I thought I had settled on something else. But now I want to give some choice to my co-hosts. Mm. Because I don't know what it says about me, but I literally went over to reconsider during Top Model Discourse. And I was looking at some of my collection and thinking, oh, what do I want? What do I want to compel people to watch? And I'm sorry, but for me, that usually means movies that in one way or another are kind of a bad time, because it's really hard to get people like, no, this is a bad time, but you really should anyway. That's often a hard sell. So I'm going to let each of you narrow it down and remove one film as I describe what kind of bad time it is. So we have three sort of bad times. Mm-hmm. One bad time is I truly have no idea what's going on and I've been here all day. One kind of bad time is, holy shit, I had no idea this was going to get as dark as it is. And the more I think about it, the worse it gets. The third option is, this isn't quite as disturbing as I thought it would be, but every bad thing that happens, I literally feel in my body and my soul.
Let's get rid of the first one.
So you each can get rid of one. Camila wants to get rid of, I have no idea what's going on and we've been here all day, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds like Camila just wants to get rid of the long one.
Yeah.
We will not be watching David Lynch's Inland Empire, the longest and weirdest David Lynch movie.
Do you know, I literally thought that might be what you were describing, because I did recently watch that movie.
Oh, well, I'm glad then, because it's the most fun if no one but me has seen it. So, Robin?
I'm going to get rid of the third one.
You're going to get rid of, this isn't nearly as disturbing as I thought, but I feel it in my body?
Yeah, because I'm really sensitive to that. I, like, sometimes feel like I'm going
to
faint.
Thus, Robin continues to avoid having to watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yes! Oh, God, but now I'm dooming right? myself. What is our third option?
This leaves us with Event Horizon, the 1999 space horror film.
Do you know that when you mentioned Event Horizon, I was like, I've got a story about that movie. But then I was like, oh, we don't have time for this.
Yeah. When I mentioned, I feel like it was like a year plus ago that I watched that.
Okay. I can rock with this.
Are you going to save your story for the episode?
I mean, I might have mentioned it when you talked, if you talked about it on the show before.
Well, either way. It was one of those times when I was laying on the couch, literally without even the energy to walk to the DVD shelf, and was just like, let me find something on a streaming service I haven't opened in a while, and I picked Event Horizon, and I thought I was getting an alien riff. I thought I was going in a normal spooky space movie, and holy shit. Has anyone, Camila, have you seen this?
I saw it in the theater ages ago, but I don't really have a lot of memory of my feelings. Yeah,
I've been itching to talk about it to the point where I tried to show it at the horror show and we couldn't get the rights. So I'm glad that the one I almost just said we're watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because that's been a runner on this show and I really wanted to prove I'm right. But another time. So next time it'll be Event Horizon, not a number one movie in America.
Love it.
As a little treat.
Little treat.
Before we get to that, Jumanji The Next Level was released December the 13th, 2019. What was the number one song in America?
Lil Nas X, isn't it?
That was the Old Town Road year, right?
It may or may not have been, but that is not the answer.
Oh. Okay.
Also on the list of things I didn't hear last night, the instrumental Nine Inch Nails song that is the basically all of Old Town Road was not played.
Ariana Grande.
Nope.
Who else?
Drake.
Yeah, Drake.
Not Drake. You know, we talked about how close... what's that?
Kendrick?
No, we talked about how close we are to COVID hitting, and this artist does have a very memorable public COVID performance, let's say.
So, on the internet?
Billie Eilish?
No, later than that. Who performed in front of the world in a way that was impacted by COVID?
Fuck if I know.
Who performed in front of a not full stadium during the 2021 Super Bowl halftime show?
The Weeknd?
The Weeknd is correct.
The Weeknd. Ladies and gentlemen, okay, what was that song?
It's not...
Blinded by the Light?
Blinded by the Light. We've done this before. This is not the first time someone has been trying to think of a Weeknd song and said Manfred Mann's Blinded by the Light, when the name of that song is Blinding Lights.
Also, that's Bruce Springsteen's Blinded by the Light. Excuse me.
The Weeknd's Blinding Lights should have been front of mind for Robin since it was just performed by Rizzo the Rat in the Muppets special.
Do we need to talk about the Muppet Show? That was great, wasn't it?
Oh, it was so good. Save it for next week. We need the Muppets to counterbalance Event Horizon next time. This is from that same Weeknd album, but I don't remember the song. Can anyone name other Weeknd songs?
No, whatever the song is from the sex movie. What is it? 50 Shades? Wait.
Shares the title with a better known Kanye song?
Heartless.
Heartless is the name of the Weeknd song in question.
Okay. Wow. That was a deep pull, but that Kanye clue was good.
Yeah. The Weeknd.
There's nothing to say about that man.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I stopped listening when you said The Weeknd.